spokesperson for the Trey Arrow Legal Defense Committee. Trey Arrow is a 31-year-old Florida-born American. Participated in lots of great peaceful nonviolent actions. He is seeking a refugee status here in Canada. We are currently going across the country talking about his case.
Today I bring you greetings and respects from the larger Trey Arrow Collective. I think we would be ignorant to think that the media, whether that be television, print media, news, magazines, books, we'd be ignorant to think that they don't control our society or set trends. It'd be ignorant for us to think that those elements, those mass media forms, help set trends and culture in our society. Have a media like these national papers, the Globe and Mail, the Portland Tribune, and CNN, stating fact that Trey Arrow is an eco-terrorist before being convicted. You see the level of intensity that the media, the FBI, and these PR groups are interested or able to set to convict a peaceful, nonviolent activist.
Activists have been fighting for equality and justice throughout history. Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, Gandhi, just to name a few, have been criticized for their beliefs and for questioning the status quo. They have been assaulted, put in prison, and threatened with their lives. However, their legacies and their struggle for equality have inspired millions and still continue to this day. The torch has been passed on from one generation of activists to another. Michael Scorpitti, also known as Trey Arrow, is an environmentalist and activist from the States who has been incarcerated in British Columbia since March 13, 2004. He is currently being imprisoned at the North Fraser Pretrial Center in British Columbia while awaiting a possible extradition to the United States. Trey came to Canada hoping to escape prosecution in the United States. This became Trey's only option when his life in Portland, Oregon was unjustly turned upside down in the summer of 2002. After working tirelessly for years to protect some of the only ancient forests left in the northwestern U.S., Trey had become an extremely well-known and important organizer. Like other peaceful organizers, Trey found himself at the forefront of an environmental movement which successfully interfered with industrial powers. He, therefore, became a target. In this first part of a two-part radio documentary, you will hear interviews with Ben Shannon and Minor Marr, Trey's friends and organizers of the Trey Arrow Speaking Tour. They are going to talk to us about Trey, who he is, and his current situation. You will also listen to the Trey Arrow Speaking Tour that was held in Winnipeg on January 20th and 21st, 2005.
My name is Benjamin Shannon, and I'm one of two spokespersons for the Trey Arrow Legal Defense Committee who are spreading awareness and education on the current struggle of political prisoner and refugee Trey Arrow, who is being held in a pretrial correctional center in Vancouver, British Columbia, awaiting an extradition to the United States. We also bring attention to the media's involvement, the corporate media in particular, and the PR, the groups in the United States in particular, involvement in criminalizing, branding, and convicting Trey Arrow of the alleged fires he's being charged with in the United States.
Ben Shannon talked to CKUW in a recent interview about Trey and his history as an environmentalist and activist of the United States.
Trey Arrow is a 31-year-old Florida-born American who entered the environmental movement in the mid-late 1990s and participated in lots of great peaceful nonviolent actions throughout his history as an environmentalist and continuing history as well, including while he was in Portland during late 99 and early year 2000, when he started helping out with the clear cutting of a land called Eagle Creek, which is in Oregon, and it's a very small percentage of the only old growth forest left in Portland. Trey was one of the main organizers in the numerous organizations seeking and educating individuals on the current struggle of Eagle Creek and the continuing devastation of some of the only old growth forest left. We're talking about 100-year-old trees, redwood trees, huge trees that would take two or three people to wrap their arms around. Trey participated with these individuals in numerous letter writing campaigns and actions to help bring more awareness, including supporting individuals who were actually out in Eagle Creek, environmentalists who would be out occupying base camps in the the edge of the Eagle Creek area, where the logging trucks and the fathers, the tree cutters would come in. Some individuals would participate in nonviolent, peaceful blockades of the logging truck roads. They would sit in front of the logging trucks peacefully, most likely eventually be arrested by the police, but basically bringing a message that they were willing to put their life and their history, their criminal record on the line to help stop the destruction of an ancient forest. Trey participated in supporting those individuals, participated in organizing for those actions, and bringing food and water to these base camps, which would occupy numerous individuals, 20, 30 people at a time. So quite big actions happening. And in late June, early July, there were a number of police, the police presence in Eagle Creek increased. And one evening, the police raids backed by the Federal Bureau of Investigations and the state police and the ODF, which is the Oregon Department of Forestries, raided a base camp and arrested all the individuals at the base camp. The next morning, activists like Trey and other environmentalists protested outside the National Forestry Building in Portland. After the protest, Trey, as I spoke with him a little while ago about the situation, spontaneously thought it would be a great idea to climb up three stories to a 9-inch ledge on the side of the building and stand there and talk to the crowd, thinking that this action would help generate momentum, generate spirit and passion within the movement of individuals below. On top of the 9-inch ledge, Trey then decided he wasn't going to come down until the ODF, Oregon Department of Forestries, and the company logging Eagle Creek, Vanport Manufacturing, stopped their destruction of the only old growth forest left. This 9-inch ledge was three stories up, where Trey perched for 11 days before descending, after massive amounts of international attention, massive amounts of press, massive amounts of support coming in from all over the world. There's articles and papers all across Europe and Japan. The amount of attention and of press coverage that that Trey was able to gain for the Battle of Eagle Creek is astonishing. He rappelled down to a series of 40 to 50 reporters, dozens and dozens of cameras and interviews, and spent hours giving interviews. People were, it was national headlines in July 2000 when he did this. That's probably one of the most famous actions Trey ever participated in, and it kind of shot him into the national spotlight. As many activists do and many environmentalists do, Trey participated in trying to do whatever he could to help fix the system, including in late 2000 when he decided to run for Congress of the 3rd District, which is basically the Portland, Oregon area, or the Oregon area, the Congress of the United States. He ran and he received 4% of the vote. He received 15,000 votes in Oregon. Of course, he lost to the incumbent the governor of the time, who has millions of dollars to spend on election campaigns. But the point being, he got 15,000 votes, which is a pretty significant amount of votes. Yeah, I'm sure he used the stardom that the legislature got him to bring more attention, and his campaign was bringing more attention to the continuous environmental degradation in the Oregon area. And the next major time, if you will, that Trey entered the spotlight is in the fall of 2001. And of course, I've left out about 9 months there from almost 12 months actually, the fall of 2000 when he ran for Congress to the fall of 2001. But during those 12 months, he continued a lot of what you would call backroom organizing. He would be working on letter writing campaigns and helping these environmental organizations, environmental NGOs in Portland, doing massive amounts of work, working with food programs, feeding impoverished and hungry people in Portland and other cities, and did lots of in the nicest way of saying, the work that didn't get him in the front page. 2001, Trey again participated in actions against the logging of a valley in the Oregon area. The valley was called God's Valley, G-O-D. And God's Valley was sold by the ODF and the National Forestry Department to an organization which most people guess quite a small tickle about, that the organization, and I'm not sure where the name came of, the logging company was called Christian Futures, and they were logging a valley called God's Valley. It's an interesting combo of names there. Trey, along with other environmental NGOs, decided that you know, they were going to participate in a variety of actions, letter-writing campaigns, petitioning, peaceful protesting. All of these actions, of course, were 100% peaceful, 100% nonviolent, including logging truck blockades, where they would sit in front of a logging truck and in front of the media and trying to draw attention to the issues. As well, during the God's Valley timber sit actions, Trey participated in what's known as a tree sit. And a tree sit is when an individual, an environmentalist, or any individual, goes up into a 100-year-old redwood tree, or any every year-old redwood tree, or whatever tree, and occupies it, refuses to come down, and sits up there, because then the fallers, the loggers, can't cut that tree. And with their actions, they stop that tree from being cut. Probably one of the most famous cases of this in the media is the case of Julia Butterfly Hill, who spent 2 years in a tree called Luna protecting that tree and eventually won, and the tree was not cut down by the loggers. And the international attention that she grew was amazing. That's just an example of the peaceful, nonviolent actions individuals can do to help protect a tree, but symbolize the protection of the environment. Trey participated in a very similar incident where he was in a tree sit. A tree sit would have a platform up pretty high in a tree, suspended from ropes, all properly set up so they wouldn't hurt the tree or damage the tree in any way. There were numerous other individuals in the forest around Trey as well, but they were being removed by what are, you know, maybe commonly called peaceful arrest, where or I would say peaceful maybe in quotations, but where individuals, non-armed individuals, will go up into the tree, either rappel down below them or climb up a second tree and rappel below them so they, you know, kind of come from above, or try to climb up below whatever they feel is safest, and basically arrest and, you know, handcuff, restrain, and rappel down an individual who's in a tree so that the loggers can cut the tree. Trey Arrow was able to build a platform which would prevent anyone from climbing up the tree. There'd be a, you know, a large sheet of plywood above your head when you're climbing a tree. It's hard to get around something like that. That high up in a tree, it's quite dangerous as well. That was it's a common tactic with most tree sits and environmentalists to do such actions. The individual who climbed the tree obviously decided to climb down when they saw that was not a possibility to remove. So the ODF and the state police and the FBI and individuals below who were, you know, carrying out their actions to remove the environmentalists so the followers could come in and cut the trees down, decided that the best tactic was to cut the branches below Trey and to refuse him to come down, to not let him come down from the tree. Trey, of course, was quite frightened by this action, and it would limit his ability to safely remove himself from the tree if emergency situation was to occur. He then, if you can imagine, 100-year-old redwood trees are huge, and their branches actually, you know, sometimes touch. Trey jumped to a second tree, so unfortunately, he was out of the safety of his tree sit, and the fallers were able to climb up and cut the branches, so he couldn't go back. He jumped to the second tree because he was afraid that he wouldn't be able to get down. Unfortunately, when they cut the branches, he was stuck on the second tree, outside of his tree sit and outside of his rigging, his rappelling devices, his harnesses, and all the ropes he had. He had very few apparatuses, and not even enough to tie himself in safely enough. The ODF, the State Forestry Department, and the state police decided to shone big spotlights, blared music, and refused Trey to sleep for a period of 48 hours. And it took refused water, of course, and food, and they were basically going to starve and water, you know, dehydrate him to the point and frustrate him to the point like they would do a hostage taker, I'm sorry. He, at 2 a.m., on the, you know, after 2 days into this barrage of lights and music and that kind of mental Trey Arrow fell asleep at 2 a.m. and fell 100 feet pretty much to his death, where he sustained massive amounts of damage. Every major internal organ was bleeding, damaged and bruised. His brain was bleeding. His pelvis was shattered. Almost every rib in his bone was broken. His arm was broken. The list of injuries was amazing. His hospital record, you can just imagine, is huge. But he survived, and he continued to live the winter months out surviving from this, and it took almost a full year for him to survive the fall. And fortunately, the God's Valley was continued to be cut, and eventually was saved by actions like Trey, and the attention the environmental movement brought to it, and the attention that non-violent, peaceful actions like the actions that Trey participates in were able to achieve the removal of the loggers, the stopping of the cutting, and the stopping of the environmental degradation. And that's a sum up of Trey's history as an activist and environmentalist in the United States.
Trey is currently being held in a pre-trial center in British Columbia, awaiting his hearing.
Trey Arrow is currently being held in Vancouver Pre-Trial Correctional Center, British Columbia. He is seeking a refugee status here in Canada. He has come from the United States to seek a refugee status and political asylum due to the massive amounts of political misconduct and massive amounts of FBI pressure and interrogation against him and other fellow activists. He's not being held for any criminal charges or any such the like, but he's being held because the United States of America has decided to press an extradition against Trey. The United States is seeking his person. They are seeking our country, Canada, to extradite Trey to them so they can press charges against him, so they can put him through their so-called justice system to stand trial for the alleged charges of two crimes, so-called crimes, in the United States in the summer of 2001. So they are currently seeking that extradition against Trey. He is being refused adequate bail. They are seeking a $300,000 bail for Trey to be released. So they're refusing him bail. They're refusing to let him out. And they are seeking an extradition to send him back to the United States to face these charges. Trey Arrow is being charged with the crimes of fire, arson, burning, logging trucks. And I stress charged with, and I stress alleged. And I feel many people in the Trey Arrow Defense Committee that, and Trey Arrow himself, and many people in our society don't make the link between burning a vehicle in the middle of the woods, whether you agree with the tactic or not, is becoming equal to terrorism. September 11th, planes, buildings, thousands of people dying. But the T word sells as good media, is the word that they use in headlines, like the C word back in the McCarthy era of communism. It sells, it brands, and it works. And that's why Trey Arrow, in particular, is continuously branded as an eco-terrorist. And I'm not referring to alleged eco-terrorist Trey Arrow blah 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 headline. I'm referring to the National Post, one of Canada's supposed to be so-called, you know, great newspapers. Our national paper refers to Trey Arrow as an eco-terrorist, blah, 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 whatever the headline is. There's no alleged. There's no accused. It's convicted. He's been sentenced. He's been branded. He's guilty. It's like the Globe and Mail was there that night and saw him did it. But unfortunately, the evidence against Trey for those crimes is so minute that it's laughable. What the evidence is the testimony of Jacob Sherman, the individual convicted of the crimes, the individual who suffered through many days of FBI interrogation, the individual who ratted out two other individuals who have subsequently pled guilty to those charges. A convicted felon, a convicted arsonist, is accusing now, after 3 days of FBI interrogation, that, oh yeah, by the way, after this huge FBI interrogation, it was Trey Arrow who actually told me to burn the logging trucks. It was Trey Arrow who did everything. Poor me, I'm just an innocent victim. He received 41 months. When he was convicted. Political arson in the United States and in Oregon in particular is a very, very serious crime. An example of that is a gentleman named Jeffrey Free Lugers. He's an individual who was convicted a few years ago of burning three SUVs in an SUV lot. He is currently serving a sentence in a federal prison in the Oregon area. He is serving a sentence beside rapists and murderers who are doing 7 to 10 years for their crimes. Jeffrey Free Lugers is doing 22 and a half years for burning three SUVs. A society which bases itself off the profit of other individuals, a society that considers SUVs, three of them, being more important than the lives and safety of individuals raped and murdered who get seven, or people, the individuals committing those crimes get 7 to 10 years. That itself shows the clear example of the ideas and philosophies of political arson in Oregon and political actions in the United States. And it also shows a society which bases itself that consumer goods, money, investments, your SUV are more important than the lives and health of human beings. Jacob Sherman, acknowledging this, took the plea bargain. His reasons, his motivations and actions I don't seek to discuss because I don't know. But he also is trying now to get out of that. The only way the FBI would give him the plea bargain, the only way he wouldn't do 22 and a half years as Jeffrey Lugar's did, is by indicting, by suggesting, and by saying that Trey Arrow is actually the guy who did all the crimes, and I'm just the poor innocent guy who came along. That's the current situation of what's happening with Trey. What he is currently seeking is a political asylum here in Canada to avoid the obvious and certain unfair trial which he will receive in the United States.
Ben and Mina have organized a Trey Arrow speaking tour nationwide to spread awareness of Trey's case and the media's involvement.
We are currently going across the country right now, talking about his case, talking about the media's role in his case, and talking about how, as a society, we continue to believe and support and regurgitate the ideas and philosophies that corporate media and biased PR groups, lobby groups, Fraser Institute, Stop Eco Violence, etc., continue to shove down our throats. We are touring the country to help spread this awareness, to help educate people, to help bring more attention to not just Trey Arrow's case, but to the idea that the media is not the voice of our society, that the media is not unbiased. You'd be hard-pressed to find any corporate media, any media that you would get a newspaper article in, any media you would see on the evening news on television, to not have a bias towards, to not have the CEOs, to not have owners who have their own private interests. And in New Brunswick alone, almost all print journalism is owned by one of the most biggest corporations in this province, the Irving Corporation. It's owned by a family of individuals who seek to control the media here and seek to control the press against their continuous destruction of this forest in New Brunswick. That is a very basic example of why we as a collective, Trey Arrow's collective, and as well the Trey Arrow Defense Committee, are traveling the country trying to educate people on the ideas and philosophies of corporate media and their usage of the word eco-terrorist to sell headlines and their usage of Trey Arrow to continuously divide and conquer, to destroy the environmental movement. We are traveling across the country to spread this awareness, to help individuals in our society, in our community, understand that corporate media and the PR groups have a large amount of weight, a large amount of influence on society's ideas and beliefs. And it's these organizations, these multi-million-dollar PR groups, these multi-million-dollar or maybe even multi-billion-dollar corporate media outlets, are shaping the idea and ideologies of our society. So we are traveling across the country, and we've been talking in cities all across this country, and we'll be continuing this tour to help bring awareness, to help to educate people on the current struggle of Trey Arrow.
Ben and Mina came to Winnipeg on January 20th and 21st as part of the Trey Arrow speaking tour. On January 21st, they held a presentation at the Mondragon Bookstore to raise awareness of Trey's current situation. They talked about Trey's upcoming hearing and the media's involvement.
Today I bring you greetings and respects from the larger Trey Arrow Collective, the Defense Committee, which has representatives in Halifax, in Victoria, Vancouver, British Columbia, Portland, Florida, and even as far as Berlin, where we have supporters organizing there to spread information and raise funds. And of course, I also bring you greetings from Michael Scarpitti, who is actually legally known as Trey Arrow, who, as I sit here and speaking to you, sits in a 8x8 cell in a pretrial correctional center in Vancouver. Not really for the crime he's ever been convicted of, but more by the ability of the corporate media, Federal Bureau investigations, and more importantly, the PR groups, lobby groups, such as Stop Eco Violence, Ron Arnold, the head of that group. Their ability to create names, like the name Eco-Terrorist, their ability to charge, to sentence, and to convict any individual they feel is a threat to the status quo. Threat, of course, in Trey's case, is of course a peaceful, non-violent threat, but a threat of an organizational level. I'm trying to think of a word that's going to explain the organizational level that Trey Arrow has. The words are coming to me. An amazing organizational level. I've worked with Trey as an organizer. we've organized is we've organized actions against the war, the so-called war in Iraq, the first few days, many months before and after. He's an amazing organizer, and that's the sole reason why he's being targeted by these lobby groups, these PR groups like Stop Ecoviolence, and their head, Ron Arnold.
Mina talked about Trey's hearing and his current refugee status in Canada.
So as we mentioned, Trey's been incarcerated in a pretrial center just outside of Vancouver since last March, 2004. He is awaiting, and he has an extradition hearing set for the middle of April, 3 days allocated for the extradition hearing. And he's also in the process of trying to seek refugee status in Canada. Now, Judge Dome, who is the provincial Supreme Court Justice, Judge Patrick Dome, has suggested a potential bail for Trey while he awaits the status of his potential refugee claim in Canada. And what he has suggested is that Trey may be able to get out on bail if he can secure a $300,000 surety in the province of British Columbia, which is an astronomical amount of money. So $300,000 surety must be in the province of British Columbia, has to be a house on a property worth that much money, plus he would need 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, paid surveillance probably, hired surveillance. And the link that the judge made was to another individual who recently got out on bail in Canada while awaiting a refugee claim to go through. And this individual was, he's a man from China who is a millionaire, who just got out on bail for $500,000, $500,000. He bought a house, bought a piece of land, hired someone to be his 24-hour, 7-day-a-week surveillance, and is out on bail now, where he's awaiting the outcome of his refugee status. So this is sort of what we're up against right now, that there is a potential for Trey to get out on bail while he awaits his refugee status, but it would involve finding an individual in British Columbia who could put up a $300,000 surety. So that's one part of it. The other part is the extradition, which, as I said, is taking place in mid-April. There's 3 days allocated for that hearing, and which could see him potentially return to the United States to face a jury in Portland, Oregon, which is the hub of where all of the propaganda is most powerful, because that's where a lot of his actions took place when he was involved in the environmental movement. And part of the reason that we are going out to BC is to talk to as many people as we can and try and garner as much support as possible.
In a recent email from April 4th, 2005, that was sent out by the Trey Arrow Defense Committee, Trey wrote to his supporters, "I would like to extend my utmost gratitude to each and everyone who has blessed me with their writings. The words of love and support, art and pictures, have brought me such joy and have given me continued strength to endure this hardship. Secondly, I want you to know that it is extremely difficult for me to write letters, but I haven't forgotten about you. Please know that I treasure all the letters I receive. And even if you don't receive a letter in return, I don't take any of the correspondence for granted. Thank you for your understanding. And when I am more able, I will write." If you would like to know more about this case, visit Trey's website at www.treyarrow.org, where you will find additional information about Trey's history as an environmentalist and activist, get the latest updates on his case, and find out what you can do to help. There are also over 24 pictures of Trey, the latest downloadable flyer, 4 free Trey Arrow images, Trey's suggested reading list and web links, and a link to 2 different rare audio interviews with Trey. This has been the first part of a 2-part radio documentary on the political prisoner Trey Arrow. In part 2, we will examine the media's involvement in branding Trey as an eco-terrorist, and also talked to Trey himself from the North Fraser Pre-Trial Center in British Columbia. My name is Bojan Dulabic, and you are listening to CKUW's The Beat, 95.9 FM.